Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio.
Oh, Thursdays, I love Thursdays. Thursdays is so much fun because I have a report the whole day. It's great. So I can kick back and, you know, chill for a little bit and love with all what they say. Believe me, I have my own chance to chat. Speaking of a report here, we have Dennis Kahorse, who has been with us a year. I'm not sure. He may have started it back at the beginning. He has to leave the report for a while. And so just as Wendy, who had to left the chat for a while, well, he'll be back, you know, and like I said, we had Dan will, I'm sure, be back at various times, depending on what, but, you know, it's busy. So it's so important to do reports while you can, when you can. Some of you don't know what's going to we do. But actually, the times that people have to leave the show, generally, we pretty much are accomplish, you know, and you don't really think of it. You don't know how or when or what circumstances cause these things to happen. But with Wendy Arthur with the Oh My God report, we really had covered the difference between, you know, God and religion and church and pastors, the difference between with some amazing discussions of spirituality of American Indian or Native American culture and the history that goes back 60,000 years, covered just an incredible thing from looking at the world as American in the world. And the folks have way, they're just busy. And so we can't do the regular, but we have a special plan often as I certainly can. Bill Fecky, waiting for him to call in. I think he just tried a minute ago and had a little bit of difficulty. Ah, the lovely and talented Bill Fecky is now with us. So I'll be right back.
On site, Action Radio presents the Fecky Report.
Good morning, Action Radio Land. Last week, I want to apologize. I brought my C game. But I am back on track this week, Greg. I'm bringing an A game. With that
no
being
grumpy
said, so five counties in Oregon have officially voted to secede from Oregon and move to Idaho.
Well, they're not moving the counties. They're extending the Idaho boundary. You want to be a little clear about that. They're not picking up and moving.
No, they're not moving. They just want to change the Idaho boundaries is what they want.
Yeah.
You know, so Idaho will cover those five counties. We've discussed this before.
Uh-huh.
So we have discussed this before. This is nothing new. These five counties actually wanted to kind of form their own state at one point, along with a couple counties in Northern California. Mm-hmm. For the state of Jefferson, which we've kind of exhausted on this site, on this
no, we haven't.
Show.
No, I want to, in fact, actually, I wanted to bring it up a little bit once you have talked about this particular thing, because it's interesting, the two different concepts, and I'm curious to see what happens. But go ahead, tell me what's going on specifically with Idaho. I wonder how Idaho feels about this.
You know, that is the million-dollar question. You know, you haven't heard anything out of Idaho legislators saying yay or nay. Which makes a total sense, because once they commit to something like this, you know, you're committing 100%. This is no, well, let's take a look and see type of deal. It's a yes or a no at this point, because you already got citizens who are ready at, you know, to change their driver's license, change their license plate and all that fun stuff. Now it's, you know, obviously it's a bigger deal than Idaho. It's, you know, it's a whole U.S. government situation right now. Changing the boundaries of a state. You know, the one thing that just popped in my head that I really hadn't thought of before is, has any state changed their boundaries since the Constitution was written? You know,
not really.
Bad
no, the irony, if you look at the original maps, the original colonies, they didn't have western boundaries. They just had north and south boundaries. So the western boundaries, because they never knew how far the land actually went until they hopped in the wagons and started looking. And so a lot of states had three sides. You know, you had the Atlantic Ocean on one side, and you had the north and south boundary. Maine changed a lot. I mean, Maine used to be, I think, bigger. Vermont and New Hampshire were created after that, Massachusetts covered all the way up to Canada, and then they became Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. So the boundaries have definitely changed. They haven't changed for a while. We've added states, but I can't think of a state boundary that's caused a change. And it kind of makes a question, too. This is why I asked about Idaho. You know, if people love Idaho so much in you know, California and Oregon, why don't they just move to Idaho? You know, I mean, become Idahoans. You know, if it's almost like they want their cake and eat it, too. They want their beachfront property, but they want to be in Idaho as well. It's like, come on, folks. You know, you can't always get what you want. Sorry, go ahead. Bill?
I'm lost for words after that little bit. No.
I was just channeling the Trump rally.
So you are correct. You know, they do want their cake and eat it too. Mm-hmm. These are people who obviously are just fed up with Oregon in general. Mm-hmm. And this is more to me a symbolic vote to say, hey, you know, we are not approving of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the way politics works, especially you know in general, most likely these five counties will see their allocation of funds drastically reduced. Not because they're being punished, just because the other counties need it so much more than those five counties.
Mm-hmm. Well, these days there'll be a reason they'll find too many white people in those counties, and they'll suddenly realize that they really need to diversify. And in the interest of equity that Tucker Carlson spoke so eloquently about last night, equity means taking what somebody wants and somebody else has. That's equity. There's going to be a big problem. I think the honorable solution to this, the proper solution, is to form the state of Jefferson. So in other words, if you're in California and you're in a part of California that's been taken over by the left and you have no representation in Sacramento, the honorable thing to do is to join with the counties in Oregon that feel they have no representation in Portland and form the state of Jefferson. This has been kicking around for 100 years, but they should, as they say, you know what, or get off the pot. And I think it's time to get off the pot. I think it's time to do it, to actually enact this. And there have been votes on this, you know. And so I think it's like 15 counties, 10 counties of Northern California, 5 counties of Southern Oregon. There's no reason why they can't form a state. I mean, they'd still be bigger than Rhode Island, so by a lot. So there's no reason why they can't form a state there. And that would be representative of the people of Northern California. And I spent some time up there. It's great folks. You know, in fact, the very first Second Amendment, when I first heard about Second Amendment sanctuaries, actually called the talk show station in Northern California. We talked about that. That article was in Canada Free Press back in 2016. So that's the best part of California is Northern and Western. Excuse me, Eastern. Northern and Eastern California. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You breathe.
Yeah, Eastern. Yeah, correct. You know, the state of Jefferson, in theory, has been thrown around for 200 years. Originally the original state of Jefferson was supposed to be East Tennessee. That was the original state of Jefferson. It was going to encompass part of West Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee. That was the original state of Jefferson. Then there was going to be another state of Jefferson that was supposed to be, I said I was going to bring my A game, and I just knocked it down to a B game. I just lost.
Don't be so hard on yourself, Bill. Stop being your own teacher.
but there has been three different times, and this being the third, even the fourth time at this point, where the state of Jefferson is being brought up. Will it happen? Not under the Democrat watch. Obviously, this is going to be a Republican state through and through, just from the, who's voting and which counties and whatnot. So it's definitely not going to be talked about on the House floor. It's going to be totally dismissed, and it will not be allowed until we have a strong Republican Senate and House.
Oh, please. Why do you think I post what I post yesterday? The GOP is now known to me as the gelding-operated party. They can't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, so they have no power. I mean, the first thing that they should have done, in fact, this is a good point, actually, that you're making, is as soon as the Democrats brought up D.C. statehood, they should have immediately said, let's consider Jefferson statehood at the same time. That's what they should have done. But they didn't. And so, in fact, I just thought of it now myself, so I can't necessarily blame them for it. But they should always have these countermeasures planned. You know, the Democrats always have their plan. They have everything, you know, they have their master plans, their five-year plans, their communist plans in a drawer, and they just pull them out, you know, depending on the power situation. I've got something I want to discuss with you, but I want to make sure that I've covered your topics first. So how are we doing?
Yeah, okay, so the last topic I really have for today, and I figured it probably would take the remaining 20 minutes of my time,
okay.
Is we got this crazy woman down in South Florida, Republican, Congresswoman Green. You know, she's spreading all these lies that, you know, people, that businesses and people cannot ask you for your COVID card, that it violates a HIPAA violation. Nothing is further from the truth on this one. The only thing that protects you with HIPAA is that health professionals cannot share information without your permission. If a business asks you for your COVID card, which, by the way, I totally disagree with that they shouldn't do, but if they do, it's up to you to surrender it or don't surrender it. And at that point, it has nothing to do with HIPAA because you are actually giving yourself permission to share the information. So
what protections do you have under HIPAA then? Because I understood that you can't ask somebody about their personal health situation, nor can you make medical determinations for them. And that also brings in the Nuremberg Code, which says you have full body autonomy. You cannot be subject to operations, procedures, or things that you do not consent to. That came out of Dr. Mengele in Nazi Germany, and so there's several different things applying here. But what specifically, like you say, like I was asking, comes under HIPAA that you're supposed to disclose, and who can ask you?
All right, so I mean, basically, you know, insurance companies are allowed to ask, and they do base determinations on that. Mm-hmm. But once
like
again,
health insurance
you have
or
right
life insurance
no.
or what?
Yeah,
what kind of insurance
yeah,
are you
both.
Talking? Okay.
Well, health insurance no more because there's no pre-existing conditions.
Okay.
You know, and that's still the way it is right now, as of right now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're talking about your life insurance. They do physicals all the time. They do blood mm-hmm. work.
Yeah.
You know, so they're allowed to. But when you're talking about just a general business, say Walmart. Walmart's a great mm-hmm. example. They had nothing to do with healthcare whatsoever except for there's a pharmacy inside, which the pharmacy is actually a separate business from Walmart. For those who don't know, just like the eye care is a separate business and the hair salon is a separate business, whatnot. So obviously, when you go in there, you actually sign up on that little scratch thing, electronic signature, that basically allows you to have a conversation with the pharmacist about your health care.
Mm-hmm.
When you give the pharmacy information to your doctor, you are giving permission to send the prescription to the pharmacist, which then the pharmacist would know only the prescription. They won't know any personal health information. But when you sign that little electronic pad, you are giving permission to disclose certain information to the pharmacist because they have to ask about. But once
that makes
again,
sense.
That is
yeah, that's for your health.
That
yeah.
is you. Yeah, that is you directly giving permission by volunteering information. Okay, that is different than my doctor, you know, posting on Facebook that I got the COVID vaccine, or you know, sending it directly to Walmart without my permission. That is two different things entirely, and that's where people are getting confused. And I think what you just said is the exact same thing. People can't do surgeries without permission. Well, yeah, of course. You have to have, you know, that does break by, that is, well, very unethical, very illegal for multiple mm-hmm. reasons.
But that would include vaccines too, I would think. You know, you can't be subjected to a vaccine, you know, and that also raises the question, can you be coerced or harassed into a vaccine? Is that not a violation of your rights? You know, in other words, a lot of people are getting the vaccine simply because of family pressure, peer pressure. I mean, I know it's up to individuals to stand up to that, but it's still coercion, or the worst coercion, of course, is at work. You know, do you have to, and the EEOC has actually ruled, I think, in error that a company can make you take a vaccine. You know, so they are forcing you into a medical procedure, whether you want one or not. So I would think HIPAA would guard against that at least, you know, and then we can work about, then we can talk about stores, you know, asking you if you have a vaccine card. Then we'll talk about something else. That's fascinating as well.
That's not HIPAA related at all. Okay. That's actually more of a, not OSHA, just the labor laws. There you go.
Yeah, the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, are the ones that came out and said that a job can.
And
I think they're wrong.
As I said a couple of weeks ago, that's mm-hmm. actually going to the Supreme Court right now.
Okay.
So that Supreme Court ruling is going to be huge on how we proceed the next couple of years.
Well, if it's accurate, you know, I mean, if it's constitutional,
it doesn't matter if it's accurate. It's huge, no matter what that answer is at the Supreme Court. Will weigh down heavily on how businesses operate going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's just facts. And,
I agree with you, whether you like it
or not.
You know, I always question the Supreme Court as to whether they're going to rule constitutionally, because their track record of late isn't very good, especially when it comes to taking up election cases that they are constitutionally mandated to take, which they aren't doing. So they could have saved us a whole bunch of trouble and a whole bunch of audit and things like that. Anyway, let's get back to this woman in South Florida. So not to be confused with Marjorie Taylor Greene, who I think is either North or South Carolina, the one that everybody knows about. This is a different Greene, right?
Oh.
Obviously.
I said South Florida. Once again, okay, now I'm at a sea level. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
What is Marjorie Taylor Greene? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know why I was thinking South Florida. South Carolina.
Sea game.
Yeah, sea game. I'm back to my sea game again.
You got two more chances.
I'll do better next
out.
Week.
Well, you know, people think it's easy to come on this show, and you got to remember that I'm at the other end of the microphone, you know, and especially when callers call in, I think they could just like you know, just throw all kinds of nonsense out. You're going to get challenged. I challenge my friends. Just think what happens to leftists that come on the show. Okay. So, you know, this is what we do. This is how we refine and define our arguments. I think it's wrong for companies to ask you, you know, whether you've had a vaccine or not. And I'll tell you why. Go ahead. I got some evidence to prove.
Well, I agree totally. It's a total invasion of privacy. Mm-hmm. It does not really affect how you're doing your business. If you were fined for this past year inside your business, allowing people to come in without the vaccine, why is it so important for them to have the vaccine at this time? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then there's been talk
marketing.
Of, you know,
I'll tell you why marketing.
It is a total. Yeah, yeah it is.
It's Dr. Fascist.
To make people feel safe.
Yeah. It's Dr. Fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic vaccine drug pusher. This might be a good time to play my new PSA, excuse me. So let me play this. I introduced it to the group last night, made it last night, played it for the first, no, night before last, played it yesterday morning for the first time. Here we go again. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back. Once again, that represents my opinion because I'm the one that made it. So there we go.
So, Greg, now we are both wrong. Marjorie Greene is actually Georgia.
Oh, okay. Well, at least we got the right person.
Yes, we are both wrong on this one. So, yeah.
Well, it happens. You feel better now that we're both wrong?
Well,
okay, fine. You're still thinking about it.
No,
same with both wrong, so there.
I was thinking South Florida only because that's where her and Matt Gaetz recently were doing a speech together, a rally
together. Florida's got another problem. Did you? I think I sent you this last night. Did you hear about they're awarding illegal aliens, you know, special services and vaccines and things? Yeah, let me pull this up here. This is from Judicial Watch. Florida County gives illegal aliens, they say immigrants, those idiots, illegal aliens special IDs to get vaccines and public services. What the hell's going on here? This is Broward County, the traitors, the leftists, the New Jersey transplants. You know, this is ridiculous. I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at it, but
it's nothing new. I mean, nothing new. What happens down in South Florida is just insane. It's just, you know, that's why, you know, we've been asking for years to divide Florida into two. Yeah. You know, because South Florida and North Florida are just two different countries. I mean,
where would you
and
divide
not
it?
Even different states.
The
original plan is right at Ocala is where it would be divided, and it would kind of be a diagonal, you know, kind of so that. Let's see here. It's a little bit. It would be way north of Tampa, and it would come. I believe it was just south of Ocala, north of
Disney World?
Orlando. South Florida gets Disney. They get Tampa. They get Miami. They get the Space Coast, which is fine and dandy by me because it's almost all left down there anyways. When we're talking about House and Senate, it really wouldn't matter because it would definitely split two and two. Obviously right now it favors the Republicans to stay where we are because we have more House and we have more senators right now as it stands.
Yeah,
if we do split
that,
in
that's,
two.
You can't divide
and, you
states
know,
based
it,
on
which something
things,
I,
yeah.
Which is my next topic I did want to discuss because last week I said her name incorrectly. Last week I called her Laura Demings, but it's actually Val Demings. I mentioned her as a possible governor candidate. Well, it just popped up this week that she most likely will be running against Marco Rubio for Senate.
Huh. Do tell.
And this is going to pose a huge problem for Rubio. Rubio is not favored up here in the panhandle. He has degraded the panhandle multiple times. Any visit he has up here usually brings in less than 70 people.
That's not good.
It's not good at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I had more people at my fundraiser than Marco Rubio had up here. So that tells you something right there. Yeah.
Bill Fetchy is more popular than Marco Rubio in the greater Pensacola area. Breaking news on Action Radio.
Yeah. I don't know if that's breaking news or not, but you know, we're
might
probably
have made breaking news.
Equally,
I'm the boss.
But...
I can do that. It's okay. I got a microphone. I'm not afraid to use it. Hey.
Yes. So Marco Rubio, he's a leftover from the Bush administration. He's definitely a Bushite all the way, and you know, he's just someone that's not very popular, but just somehow just manages to skate by. But this is a very dangerous spot right now that Rubio could be in and the Republicans could be in because we could definitely lose the Senate seat very easily. Demings is a very powerful black woman, former sheriff in Orlando. She's definitely Democrat.
Okay.
She's on the progressive side at that. She is for that defunding the police stuff, which. You know, whatever. And then, you know, so it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out if Rubio could find a way to spark the base. Because right now, unless someone replaces him in the Republican primary, I just don't see a path for Rubio winning unless he just votes straight party line.
What if Gates does it? What if Gates challenges Rubio in the primary? Our own Matt Gates.
You know, he's an enigma right now. Yeah, obviously he's still innocent until proven guilty, but this guilt is starting to look worse and worse by the day. And this has nothing to do with the left media spinning at all. These are just facts that are coming out right now from multiple sources. The new grand jury just unleashed a new witness that could end up being very damning to him. It'll be very interesting to see what happens. This Elliot. Is his name. Supposedly Gates is saying he's never met him. Elliot said he's been partying with Gates before. It just doesn't sit well for Matt right now. Will he win?
Well, we should talk about that in detail. because I want to know who the personalities are.
Well, if Gates stays at – Gates' best move right now would just to stay at the congressional seat. There's no one worthy of – challenge. There's no worthy challenger of him as of right now. So, I mean, he's just better off. He's going to win off of name recognition alone, even if he's found guilty. You know, I remember Charles Wrangler up in New York. You know, he gets kicked out of Congress, gets vote, and then he gets turned around and gets voted right back in.
Alcee Hastings, Alcee Hastings was a convicted judge, and then he ran for Congress for the next 20 years or something like that.
Yeah.
So he was thrown off the bench. Yeah, he just passed away recently. The thing about Matt Gaetz that I want to find out is A, the personalities. Let's find out what's real and what's made up. What's what's just the Democrat obligatory sex scandal that most Republicans go through once they start to get some power. That I would include Roy Moore, Jim Jordan, and of course Trump. All of Trump's the women that talked about his sex scandals, they disappear right after the election. So these are election scandals,
yep,
as opposed to genuine scandals, which should be investigated. My question though for you, of what you know of this right now, is this stuff that happened after he got to office and became corrupted by the D.C., influence, which happens, or is this a pattern that went on before he became a congressman? This is what I'm curious about.
So this is before – this started some will say it started as early as high school where people are talking about, that he went to a high school dance with a girl and he was showing a picture of a naked girl, a different naked girl to her on his phone.
Oh, that's endearing.
So there's that. Yeah, I know. I don't understand that concept at all. Obviously, he didn't like the girl he was going to the prom with.
Well, I don't know
what the answer was.
How far back do you go these things? Go ahead.
This is the big thing, though. Okay, this is the big one. And this is the point scandal, I'm going to call it, that's been happening in the Florida House for a very long time. Many people have credited Gaetz for this point. And it's a point game where who you sleep with, the more points you get, and then they have a winner at the end of session. So like an aide, if you sleep with an aide, it may be 1 point. If you sleep with a married congresswoman, it may be 3 points. And then there was always like, if you're able to get now the attorney general, who was at the time was Pam Bondi, you automatically win. This is stuff that Gaetz has actually admitted to.
Really?
And it went. Wow. It flew under the radar.
Can I play?
Came out and.
I'm just kidding.
That was a joke, folks. Get to Florida House and you'll be able to. But is stuff that has been very well known, and this is not something that this is one of the worst kept secrets in Tallahassee, and it bleeds out all over the state. Everyone has who has played the game has admitted to playing the game and admitted who is the founder of it, and that's Gaetz. And he's carried that into D.C. And when you you're hearing these interviews with congressmen saying, "Yeah, he's shown me pictures of a naked woman that he was with, and this, that, the other thing." So his behavior, whether he's a supporter of Trump, whether he's a supporter of, the conservative movement or not, you still have a guy who doesn't have very high moral standards. And at some point in time, it's going to come back to bite you. And I believe this may be the time. And, when you talk about lobbyists, all lobbying is bribing. But now they're talking about,
bringing him up
on charges. Yeah, exactly.
We educate.
But they're talking about bringing
him up on charges. We don't spend money on anybody. We don't have any money.
This is a big issue. Okay, is a huge issue, is that this medical marijuana in Florida, Matt Gaetz was against it. He was always very vocal against it. And then he makes a trip down to the Bahamas on behalf of his buddy who happens to own one of the medical marijuana companies. And this is the big scandal that everyone's talking about with the underage girl being on this trip. And, it's a bunch of hookers and they all go down and they're doing cocaine down in the Bahamas. Matt Gaetz comes back, and all of a sudden now he's the biggest proponent for medical marijuana, and he's leading the cheer. So a lot of people are looking at that and saying that, he took a bribe to change his vote. So, me personally, I don't believe that was it. I just think that Matt Gaetz saw the political landfield changing, and he went with and he got in front of the wind and said, you know, medical marijuana is what's going to people are for it, so I'm going to be for it too. And that's my personal feeling on the matter.
Yes, you got to go by principle.
I mean, really
you know, the real principle people are the ones that take a stand before it's popular, and maintain that stand, you know, until it becomes popular, and then they say, well, look, you know, I've always felt this way, and they have the track record to prove it. I mean, we have a track record here at Action Radio, for example. And I got Josie on the line. I'll bring her on in just a second. I'm waiting for Claire to come on too. So when she comes on, we'll. Well, I make Jesse's line live right now, but the thing is, you know, we have done some things that I believe are principled. You know, we came out against mask mandates and lockdowns back at March 2nd last year, you know, in 2020, because I discovered that chloroquine kills COVID based on a study of Dr. Raoult in Marseille, France, backed up by Dr. Zelenko here. So we took what I believe was a principled stand, and we took a lot of flack for that. I took a lot of criticism. You should see the Facebook posts. You know, that I think caused the leftists to want to try and shut me down, thinking we were lying. And now everything that we said last year is turning out to be true. You know, that what's going on in the Wuhan lab, the Dr. Fascist is up to his ass in corruption, funding the lab, working with China on a bioweapons program. China gets the bioweapons program for their army. We and Dr. Fascist gets his marketing program to terrorize this country, you know, do as much as possible to damage Trump and scare the hell out of most of this country based on misinformation. And all that stuff's turning out to be true. We've been talking about this for over a year, and so has Gateway Pundit, and so has Cheryl Atkinson and some other folks have been reporting on this consistently, the same kind of stuff. So the principle, that's the test. Are you willing to go by your convictions even when everybody else says you're an idiot or a fool or a liar? That's you know, in terms of marijuana, it's the same thing. If you believe that this is the right thing to do, then say so. But don't suddenly change your position just because some lobbyist gave you a whole bunch of money. Now you have no principle, and I have no faith in you. You know, that's the problem I see there. Let's get to Josie real quick before Claire gets here. Josie?
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
Good morning. Matt Gaetz, I believe they made up a lot of the stuff. And there's nothing you can do to go back and change what you did when you were 18 years old. This is the tactic that the Democrats have done to a lot of the conservatives. Also, about Miami, there's a lot of Cubans, a lot of Nicaraguans like me and my whole family. Some of my families are they voted for Biden, but most of the people that I personally know, they're Republicans because they've been through communists. So not all Miami is radical. I will say some of the retirement places, people in Palm Beach, people that came from up north, that's a different story. Because they're radical left from New York, New Jersey.
Yeah, but Josie, I mean, you can say the same thing about Pensacola, Escambia County, where we're not all redneck, gun-toting Trumpites, you know, 30 for Biden. This past election. Mm-hmm. So you could say the same thing about there.
Yeah.
The fact is that your majority does still rule. Going back to what you're saying, though, about Gaetz, the Democrats are not the ones bringing this up. And you know, and this is the important thing. Now they've taken it and run with it, but the Democrats are not the ones who came up with this. This is a Republican infighting.
Think. Yeah, but that's what
Josie, you think. It started with the tax collector down in Tampa who was falsely accusing a teacher of sleeping around. So the teacher fought back and exposed all this, and then it just went crazy. You know, this thing, it started between two Republicans fighting, and one of them, Greenberg, who's a complete scum. I mean, he is scum.
Exactly.
And,
he's
you know,
a rhino.
And he's the one. Well, he's the best friend of Matt Gaetz. There's no doubt in anyone's mind. They have called each other best friends. They have called each other, you know, they've said Greenberg is Matt Gaetz's wingman. I mean, they've never denied a friendship. I mean, it's more than a friendship. It's like best friends hanging out on a regular basis. You know, and just remember this too. Matt Gaetz has never denied sleeping with prostitutes. He has never he's denied.
He's been asked about it?
The only thing he has denied. Yes, he has been. And his response was, well, I'm no monk.
That's not a response. That's an admission. That's kind of crazy.
So,
I mean,
so,
the answer is if
you
never slept with prostitutes, the answer is no.
I would almost always agree I would agree with you if this was Democrats who are fueling this, but they're not
fueling this.
They're throwing gas on a fire. There was already a fire. The fire had started, you know, when Greenberg got busted. That's what started this whole thing. Greenberg got busted, and he, instead of going to jail for 50 years or for life, whatever it was supposed to be, he decided he was going to flip on everybody, and anyone who was ever involved with him, he was going to tell on them just so he could get his 12 years and be done. Hmm. And that's what this is all about. These stories have been proven. I mean, the flight records. Are you saying that the Democrats have falsified flight records down to the Bahamas? You have four people from that flight that verified. And they're all Republicans
and
that verified.
They all get paid. See, the American people have a good heart and they believe everything. No, you have to know the snakes. I mean, it is bad. They did it to Herman Cain. Herman Cain was running for president. And they came up with all the prostitutes. And that's their thing. See, the American people have to wake up. And they will eventually. They will eventually.
Jesse, I think there's a couple things going on here. One, it seems to me there is a lot of problem and evidence with Matt Gaetz, and we need to kind of go through that. But so there are also cases where the Democrats specifically target people, like Herman Cain, Roy Moore, Jim Jordan, I don't believe had anything to do with any of this stuff, but they were targeted. Matt Gaetz, there's enough stuff there. I agree with Bill. There's enough stuff there that we have to investigate. I want to bring Jonathan on in the conversation, too. Jonathan Mosley, our legal constitutional expert. Claire has not called in. So we were scheduled Claire for this time because she had other commitments and things. She may have a commitments where she can't call in this morning. So if that's the case, then it's just Jonathan and Josie and Bill for as long as she can stay. And then let's get going. But I want to ask Jonathan specifically about the Matt Gaetz situation. Is this does Washington corrupt people? You know, do they suddenly find all this power? They get the perks, they get the lobbying, or is Matt Gaetz, you think, corrupt, you know, before he got there by what happened in the state? Or just sort of fill us in on what goes on in Washington when new people get to Congress. Jonathan?
Well, I mean, I think you can hear me, I hope, right?
Yeah, you're fine. Yeah.
You know, I think it does. We have long had the idea here in the Washington, D.C. of what's called Potomac fever, you know, suggesting that, you know, people like certain rivers in remote areas have, you know, real disease. So the joke is that people here drinking the water in the Potomac area are affected by it. It does go to their head. Everybody tells them how wonderful they are all the time and how important they are and kisses up to them. And eventually, human nature being what it is, it affects how they view things and themselves. Mm-hmm. So I think people do take more more chances. I also think it's a selective view of things, in that, you know, especially for the Democrats and people in politics in general, the purpose of the legal system is to, we actually debated a lot in law school. It's like, what is it revenge? Is it to uphold the law? But when you get into politics, the purpose of the legal system and the laws is to score points. It's not to uphold the law. It's not to uphold justice. It's to gain advantage over people. So I think we see things selectively. They come to light in an unrepresentative way in terms of what's really true. It's just based on what's the advantage. So I really believe that a lot of it is that we don't see everything going on unless it's to somebody's advantage.
All power corrupts. Jonathan, can I hold you up for just a second here? I mean, it's a great answer so far. I've got Claire on the line. She may have limited time just because she's getting busy.
Right.
I guess she's getting a little popular. So
right,
I'll switch
so
to
Greg,
intelligence
I,
report.
I'm gonna drop off. I got to go earn my dollar for today. So you guys have a good rest of the show.
Well, thank you, Bill. Appreciate a great report today. Let's get to Claire.
The movies have James Bond, but we have Claire Lopez. Does she drive an Aston Martin, fly to resorts on the French Riviera, and chase bad guys like Ernst Stavro Blofeld and Goldfinger? No, but she was a career officer with the CIA. Claire is an expert on the former Soviet Union, Central and Eastern Europe, and the Balkans. She speaks Spanish, Bulgarian, French, German, Russian, and is studying Farsi. Claire is documenting the cabal of the Muslim Brotherhood, Black Lives Matter, and Antifa. She is also describing how China is turning us into yet another property owned by the Chinese Communist Party. And now, Claire Lopez with the Intelligence Report on Action Radio.
Claire, I still think you should get an Aston Martin. I mean, I just got this vision in my head of you racing through the European hills or the hills behind Monaco or something like that. Good morning, Claire.
Yeah, not so much. Never been to Monaco in my life.
I have. It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but we have this. We do have a little bit of fun here on the show. But seriously, though, I'm really glad you came on, and I know you might be busy, so I want to let you get right to this. We've got a problem. Title of the show today: Trump brought peace, and the thief in chief Biden brings Middle East war. I'm just going to let you go. Tell us what the hell went wrong, and how do we get where we are now?
Well, what went wrong is that Americans have a new administration in the White House, and it's widely perceived around the world by friends and enemies alike as weak, unable to, unwilling to defend American interests anywhere in the world, including at home. And so it's open season. It's open season on America and American allies, friends, partners, like Israel. In that case, you've got the Islamic terrorists, Hamas, and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, possibly with Hezbollah even jumping in or thinking about jumping in to the north, and all of them under the aegis funding, training, arming weapons of Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran and its regime.
Wow. Spain recently had an invasion of only 8,000, I say only, compared to we're going to get over 1.5 million this year. But they just got a whole bunch of folks from the Muslim world showed up on their shores. Is that part of this? Are more countries going to be affected, do you think?
The failure of Europe to defend its own borders, to defend its own civilization, from mass incursions by those who would overrun it, that's on them. They're destroying themselves deliberately on purpose, and Europe is
when they're not fighting each other, which is their history of the last 1,000 years or more.
Well, no, and not a 1,000 years. I mean, 1,000 years ago, Europe was defending itself. Europe was standing up for its heritage. It's Judeo-Christian, background, its principles, traditions, its values.
Huh.
But after, after the 20th century, it's not anymore. It's just allowing itself to be overrun.
Huh. I was thinking, I guess, the 16, 17, 1800s when, it seemed like France, Spain, Germany, England were constantly at war, the Hundred Years' War. I'm not sure exactly when that was. But weren't there conflicts going on where they were fighting each other, and then, there were times when Islam would invade as well?
I mean, that is true.
Okay.
And a lot of those were internal wars, especially between Christians, Catholics, and Protestants.
Okay.
As you said, exactly right, the 1600s and so forth. But they were at the same time, just as you also note, fending off invasion by Muslim hordes.
Okay.
And today, they have reached, after the horrific destruction of the 20th century wars, World War I, World War II, they've reached, an internal peace and a way of negotiating differences among themselves. But at the same time, then, they completely and totally gave up any pretense of defending themselves, their heritage, traditions, values, principles, against external invasion, again, by Muslim hordes, mostly, unattached, young, fighting-age male Muslims, and just seem to think that this is hunky-dory.
Yeah. It's like the Christian world plays by political correctness and, you know, tries to do everything honorably, and the Muslim world does whatever they can because it's jihad, whatever it takes to win. It's like communists versus, our own government. Communists will do whatever it takes to win. China's in a, what do they call it, unlimited warfare or whatever it is, and our government's totally restrained. We can't say anything. We can't do anything. You know, we have Asian hate laws now and things like that. We're playing by two sets of rules here. How am I doing?
Yeah, we are, and so is Europe. I mean, let's call it Western civilization altogether. Simply somehow lost the will to survive. I have no way of explaining it. Why that will to survive, to even have children, has gone out of Western civilization. It seems like, you know, some kind of fatal flaw out of Greek, theater. That once Western civilization reached the pinnacle of what one would think was the, you know, human development, enough to eat, fine shelters, machines to do heavy work, leisure time to pursue arts and music and all of that. Just at that pinnacle point, they collapse. And they stop having children, stop defending everything that got them where they are, and instead allow themselves to be overrun by savagery, basically.
Yeah, we're doing the same thing here, and it's plainly obvious, except for those of us who are fighting back. I think the tide's turned. I think it turned with the Eurozone on it, but I want to talk about that another time. One of the first things I noticed about the United States when I moved here from Australia is that Canada acted in its own interest. Australia acted in their own interest. This is the first country I lived in, or I had lived in, I came here as a teenager, that appeared to me it was not acting in its own interest. In fact, acting in your own interest was almost a moral guilt. It was a problem. You couldn't do that. You always had to have some kind of slogan to defend yourself. Whatever you did, it had to be based on human rights or make the world safe for democracy or whatever the slogan was. You couldn't just act in your own interest. We couldn't defend ourselves just because we were defending ourselves. We had to have some other part to that. I think that's always been a handicap of this country, that we can't just do things that would help us. We can't just, settle things in the Middle East like Trump did. We're going to talk about the Abraham Accords in a bit. But there's this mental block, like you're saying. Why would people willingly give up their civilization? It makes no sense, unless you have some kind of political guilt trip. What do you think?
I think what happened is that the United States in particular, but also look now at Australia and Canada and certainly New Zealand.
Yeah.
By allowing infiltration into our original society, that was founded by those of a Judeo-Christian Western civilization background, by allowing ourselves to be overrun by immigrants, legal, illegal, refugees, from places where those principles mean nothing. As a matter of fact, they are deliberately sworn to tear down those principles by allowing them into our countries en masse. We diluted our own civilization, and now we are being torn apart from within.
You can't cure what's happening externally until you fix what's happening internally. I see the fixing internally, like I say, is the Arizona audit, the parents that are speaking up at school boards. It's changing. It's just not changing fast enough for me. We only have so much time, so let's get to the Abraham Accords. Let's talk about what went right. When Trump took office in 2016, can you kind of walk us through how he changed Middle East policy and how we got to nations that had never agreed before were signing peace treaties with Israel? How did they do that?
Right. So I wish this could have begun sooner, but during the last year, 2020, of the first Trump administration, President Trump and his team turned really with a lot of focus to the Middle East and built on what the Israelis had already begun for a very long time, credit where credit is due. The Israelis, for a very long time, already had been reaching out to their neighbors, their Arab Muslim neighbors, to build relationships.
Okay.
And not just government to government, you know, diplomatic relationships, but people to people. And that's what makes the difference. So, of course, you know, the Israelis and the Egyptians signed a peace treaty back in 1979. And that
I was just
going to
mention that, yeah. Did that start a whole wave of things? Okay.
That was an agreement to end actual armed hostilities.
Okay.
And then later, 1994, a peace treaty with Jordan, again, to end a situation of armed hostilities. But it wasn't yet full opening of relationship. And to this day, it is not with either one. However, when Trump came to this endeavor in about 2020, I mean, I would say he started earlier, honestly. We really should go back to 2017, to May of 2017, you know, when he made the first overseas trip of his first term of the presidency. He went where?
Saudi Arabia,
He went to Saudi Arabia.
All right.
And he met with the assembled Sunni leadership of the Arab Muslim world, gathered there by invitation of King Salman of Saudi Arabia. No, the Shiites weren't there, but the Sunnis all were.
Okay.
And I remember the sword dance. Yeah, I don't know if everybody recognized the importance of that. Of that trip and that meeting, that speech at the time. I remember that I gave a talk about it up on Capitol Hill for a group that later kicked me off their board of directors because I spoke about favorably about Saudi Arabia and having initiated this meeting. But what Trump did was called upon the Saudis and the Sunni world really to give up, he didn't say these words, but essentially to give up jihad. He didn't tell them, you know, ditch Islam, of which jihad, of course, is an integral doctrinal element. But he appealed to them to enter a new phase of relationships with each other, with the United States, with Israel. And I thought that was tectonic plates moving in the Middle East, and I said so in the speech. Got me fired.
Hey, listen, I only want people who've been fired on my show, quite frankly, because if you haven't been fired, you don't have any principles. Yeah, that's, you know, I've been fired. Listen, I get kicked off my radio show for you know, bringing about Action Radio and doing broadcast history, wrote a legislation on the air, never been done before. I got fired for it. I don't listen. You're welcome. To me, that's a virtue.
Well,
so,
thank you. Thank you very much.
You have principles. So, yeah, no problem at all.
What happened later then, and through the years, not just from 2017, but it dates back before that. The Israelis, as I said, had already been building people-to-people relationships, meaning academia, meaning medical, meaning technology, meaning business people, with these Arab countries. And so, when Trump comes along in 2020. And the first thing, remember what the first thing was he did? He offered the peace plan of the century. Remember that? To the Arabs of the region. And it was quite generous, if we recall. It offered them a nation state. It offered autonomy over Gaza and parts of Judea and Samaria. It offered huge economic investment in the economies there. And many other things, but there were preconditions, and those preconditions were recognize the Jewish state of Israel's right to exist and cease all military hostilities against Israel. Not asking for much, really. I mean, unless you're an Islamic jihadi. Well, they refused it outright. I mean, they turned it just flat down. Nobody, you know, in either Gaza or from the Palestinian Authority of Ramallah wanted any part of it. That was the first step. Then the next step was reaching out to these Gulf states, beginning with the United Arab Emirates, right? Also Bahrain.
Mm-hmm. Yep, remember
then,
that.
Then later after that came Sudan and Morocco. And eventually all four of those, each of those four, signed full normalization of relations with Israel. Now, notice I'm not calling them peace treaties because they're not. They're not peace treaties. They're agreements to full normalization of relations, which is a very different thing. First of all, that these four countries had never been at war with Israel. But secondly, that the scope of the agreements, the scope was far larger than simply cessation of hostilities. And so that's the strength of them, and why I think they'll continue, they'll persevere, they'll remain. Saudi Arabia, obviously behind them, supportive of them, even though it didn't join them right away. But of course, you know, then comes along this new administration here in D.C., and they kick everything to the curb. They kick all of that to the curb, and now the Middle East is in flames again. You know, thank you, the idiots who took over the White House.
Well, and I want to talk a little bit about that. A couple of more things I want to mention. Did the Trump administration know that the Palestinians, which are not, we should probably make this clear again, they're not a country. They're you know, there is no Palestinian people in history. They never had a state. You know, this is a made up thing. I think Britain, you know, declared Palestine back in the early 1900s. So I want to kind of go through
Romans
that just quickly again.
Called it Palestine in the year 70 AD. Yes, that's where the name comes
from. Oh, this is why you're on the show, because you know stuff. This is fascinating.
So after the Romans put down the Jewish revolt in 70 AD or CE and destroyed Herod's temple, the second temple, and dispersed Jews into diaspora and exile across the world, they changed the name of the region, which formerly they had called Judea. Excuse me.
Okay.
Called it, of course, after Jewish people, Judea.
Judaism, yeah.
And they decided to take a name out of the Old Testament of the Bible of the enemies of the Israelite people of that time, who were the Philistines. Philistines are an Indo-European people who came out of the islands of the Aegean after the Trojan Wars. And settled
the Greek,
11 times coast.
Right? Would they be Greek ancestry then?
They were. I mean, the Bible talks. The Old Testament talks about endless fighting between the Israelites and the Philistines.
Okay.
And so the Romans reached back there to grab that name, to slap it on the region, as a way of denying its identity to the Jewish people.
Okay.
That's
and that's still going
comes.
On. And that hasn't changed.
Philistine. In Arabic, it's Philistine. That's what Palestinian is in Arabic, Philistine. It's the same word.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
The Romans slapped that. The Romans
so there's never,
it. However,
there has
later
never been,
on.
Go ahead, yeah.
In the Ottoman period, but certainly thereafter, after World War I, when the British and the French established mandates in the region following the collapse of the Ottoman Empire, and the British had the British mandate of the whole region of, call it the southeastern littoral of the Mediterranean and inland all the way to Mesopotamia, and they created a bunch of new countries out of whole cloth. There was no Iraq. There's no such thing as Iraq. There were three vilayets, or governorships, under the Ottoman Empire, Basra, Baghdad, and Mosul. There was no Iraq, but they created it. There was no Jordan. That never existed in all of history.
It doesn't sound like an Arab name.
The British were supportive of the Hashemites, a tribe that had gotten kicked out of Mecca, where they were called the Sharifs of Mecca, the administrators of Mecca, when Ibn Saud took over Saudi Arabia. The Hashemites got kicked out. The British were favorable to them, supportive of them, and said, you poor things, you need to have something. We'll give you this whole 75% of what had been the British mandate designated for the Jewish people. And they just up and gave it, said, you poor Hashemites, you deserve a country, so we'll make you a country. We'll call it Jordan and put your king on the throne. That's where Jordan came from.
Okay.
And there, right then and there, the Jews lost, you know, 70-something% of the land of the British mandate that would have been theirs.
And then have they ever tried to claim it back? Have they ever tried to claim it back again? Has Israel ever tried to claim that land back, saying it was stolen from us?
It's the country of Jordan.
I know.
No.
Just curious.
Well,
if it was made up once, you know.
No. I mean, the League of Nations following World War One, following, of course, the Balfour Declaration, 1917, the San Remo Conference of the year 1920, and then the League of Nations in 1922, established that part of the British Mandate, well, what would become known as the British Mandate, as the homeland for the Jewish people.
Okay.
It's legal. It's in international law. And then, of course, when the League of Nations turned over in 1945 to the United Nations, it turned over that same wording, the establishment of a homeland for the Jewish people, in toto, turned that wording right over to the United Nations, which then legally established the modern-day state of the State of Israel. But at that point, partition had already occurred. The British had already carved off, as I said, that huge chunk of the mandate and given it to the Hashemites.
Mm-hmm.
And then under the United Nations, the offer was made to the Arabs of the region and to the Jewish people of the region, each to have their own state. And the Jews, even though they were getting a little truncated part of what was supposed to come to them, they immediately said, yes, we'll take it. Ben-Gurion, you know, Tel Aviv in 1947, you all remember that speech, said yes immediately, and they established the Jewish state of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And the Arabs, of course, immediately said no and went to war and invaded overnight.
Yeah, but the Palestinians, what everybody thinks of, and I got two people live. I got Pianki live, and I've got Jonathan live, and I've got Bert on the line. Bert, I'm going to hold you off for a little bit because we would conflict too much at this point. I want to get this information out. But there has never been a Palestinian state. These folks have no claim to that land. They're refugees from Jordan mostly, right?
Other places. They come from all over the Middle East, including Egypt. I mean, Yasser Arafat, for example, was born in Cairo.
Okay.
They come from various places. All around the region. You see, if anybody ever read Mark Twain, for example, back in the 1800s, when he visited the region and wrote about it,
mm-hmm.
He described it as barren, swampy, malaria, and mosquito-infested. It just, you know, a few scattered towns and some Bedouins, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But after Theodor Herzl led the return of the Jewish people to Israel beginning in the late 1800s, they began to transform the land, and with their brilliance, I mean, there's no people on earth as brilliant as the Jewish people. They learned how to use water for agriculture and literally made the desert bloom. I mean, any of us who's ever been to Israel, I've been many times, you drive up and down the Mediterranean coast, for example, it is mm-hmm. one citrus grove after another, the lemons, the oranges, the and other crops. Everything is green and blooming. That's what the Jewish people did. And so as that land began to become more attractive, Arabs started moving in because,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was the place to be.
Sounds like Democrats in our major cities, when the cities get popular, like when New York grew to the great, the economic capital of the world, you know, so the Democrats moved in and destroyed it. And we see where New York is now. Seems to be an analogy with what's going on with, Israel made this incredible place. And then the Arabs that wanted to move in and wanted their stuff, it's always about their, you know, other people's stuff, moved in. And now they got this whole refugee camp known as Palestinians.
Well, I mean, you know, the refugee camps were established after the War of Independence in 1948-49. And I don't mean to say that all of the Arabs who flocked in were a negative influence. They weren't. There are a whole bunch of Arab Israelis, as they call themselves, who are absolutely positive, productive members of that society and citizens of Israel to this day. They serve in the military. They serve in the judiciary. They are in the Knesset as elected members of parliament. So, you know, this is not to tar them all with the same brush. No.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is that they did come in from other places once the land began to bloom.
Okay. I think people forget that. And there's a large percentage of Israeli Arabs. Now, how are they viewed by – I mean, how do Israeli Arabs view Israeli Jews, and how does the leadership of Israel view Israeli Arabs?
Well, they all have the same citizenship, the same rights, as I said, if they are citizens of Israel. They have exactly the same rights. they do serve in the military, as I said, in the judiciary as judges. They serve in the Knesset as members of parliament, et cetera, even throughout society. So they're treated exactly with the same rights and obligations as Israeli citizens of any other background.
Okay.
Israelis and we, I think, all looked at what we would call the mixed population cities, where there were many Arab as well as Jewish people living there, as success stories, as this is how it should be, living peacefully side by side. But then, over these last few couple weeks, unfortunately, we've seen an outbreak at the instigation, mind you, of Fatah, the PLO, Ramallah, an outbreak of violence by Arab Israelis against their Jewish neighbors. They've burned synagogues. They've attacked Jews on the streets. They've committed vandalism against their homes in cities like Lod, like Haifa. It's really been devastating to see.
This wasn't expected. This is like your neighbor, your friend is turning on, you know, Arabs are turning on Jews in Israel, and yet they're both Israelis. This was not expected.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
Instigation, to be sure, coming out of the leadership of the Palestinian Authority, and of course out of the mosques. A very unfortunate development.
Was there subversion in Israel that they weren't aware of? That this is going on in the mosques and maybe Arab schools, for example, or indoctrinating younger folks?
They may not have paid enough attention to it. Just as here in America, we don't pay attention to what's going on in our mosques. What the leadership
that's for sure.
Are saying in American Islamic centers and mosques and being taught in the madrasas. We don't pay attention either, do we?
No, and we have something you've talked about before that you alerted me to, is that Black Lives Matter, Antifa, and the Muslim Brotherhood are all working together, and we have now Palestinians chasing down Jews in American cities. I was watching a clip on One American News last night.
Yeah.
So they've joined again. Can you talk about that for a little bit? And then I promise I'll open it up to Bianchi and Jonathan to get some questions here. Go ahead.
The news that you're talking about, Greg, I saw the same thing myself, and this happened in California, once again, in what's called the Fairfax neighborhood, which is populated by Jewish communities.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, as last summer, if we'll recall, in 2020, mobs ran amok. Black Lives Matter, by the way, has explicitly on its own social media sites expressed solidarity with the terrorists, just like in Congress. You know, Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar have done the same thing, expressed support for the Islamic terrorists, Hamas, and enmity towards our friend and partner, the only representative democracy in the entire Middle East, Israel. But they ran amok through these neighborhoods once again, terrorizing people. This is just over the last 24, 48 hours in California, Los Angeles.
Yeah. So my last question before I turn this over, the Biden, you know, the thief in chief, the fraud president, this is what happens, folks, when you let a fraud, you know, sit in the White House, has refunded. He started funding again for the alleged Palestinians. He's doing everything, and he's basically given the go signal that this is okay. And I don't even know if he's going to replenish the Iron Dome missiles to protect Israel. Can you talk about what's coming out of the White House?
But yes, he did re-establish funding for the Palestinian Authority. money, which of course does not go, you know, to the Arab population of Ramallah or Nablus or Jenin or Tulkarm or any place else in Judea and Samaria, but rather to the magnificent, I don't know if you've ever seen these things, but lavish villas of the leadership like Abu Mazen. I've been there. I've been in Ramallah. I've driven right past these monstrosities.
Wow.
And not to the people, though, but to the leaders' lifestyles and, of course, to instigating more terror and to weapons.
Yeah. And so the American people are being lied to. There is no Palestine. There is no state. There's no reason for a state. These people come from all over the Arab world. The Israel is not an apartheid state. All the stuff that the Americans are hearing is total BS. And yet, this is what I think is allowing this to happen. Let me bring Jonathan and Pianki into this. Jonathan, do you want to get in this discussion? I think I surprised him.
I'll try to unmute myself. One thing you talked about painting all the Palestinians and Arabs of whatever description through the same brush. I mean, because what I wanted to touch on, and you could correct me or explain this, that the Palestinians, most of whom are part of the violent conspiracy, even if they're just living there, were kicked out of Jordan, right? And they're not welcome in Jordan or Egypt. And so when you consider that region, I mean, there are even many of the Arabs in Jordan and Egypt who don't agree with this behavior. Could you help us understand that?
Well, sure. So the Muslim Brotherhood, of course, originated in Egypt, in Cairo, in 1928, founded by Hassan al-Banna and other fellow students there at the time, university students. Egypt has basically two choices. They can either have a military rule or they can have the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, they believe exactly the same things, exactly the same Islamic doctrine. Anybody who's ever read the current president of Egypt, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi's, we call it a mini thesis, about 11 pages long, that he wrote while at the U.S. Army War College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, between 2005 and 2006. Anybody who's read that has seen him declare his support for Islamic law, for a global caliphate. It's all in his little mini thesis. So there's no difference in what they believe, but it's all who gets to be in charge. Now, would we here in the United States and probably the Egyptian people too much prefer the military to the Muslim Brotherhood? Yeah. So that's why the Brotherhood got kicked out. Likewise in Jordan, you're right, Jonathan, after especially the 67 war when Israel recovered areas of Judea and Samaria that had been conquered and ruled over by Jordanian forces in the War of Independence back in 48-49. Israelis recovered that in the War of 1967. There were a lot of refugees that left that area and went into the east bank of the Jordan River, that being Jordan, which is really, if you want to talk about a Palestinian state, that's it. It's Jordan. And they went there, but because, remember, the ruling Hashemites, the monarchy, of which King Abdullah is currently the head, themselves are not of the region. They came out of Saudi Arabia. They are refugees, if you will, themselves out of Saudi Arabia. So the local Muslim Brotherhood supportive types are not, they are opposed to the Hashemite monarchy and would like to topple it. And Abdullah has his hands full. Remember, of course, Black September back in 1970 when the PLO tried to make a move on the kingdom against his father, King Hussein at the time. It's always been a threat to the Jordanian monarchy from the Muslim Brotherhood and remains so to this day. Now, the Muslim Brotherhood actually serve in the Jordanian parliament. So they're part of the government, but at the same time, they're a fifth column internal threat to that government as well.
I want to get Pianki in the conversation here. I think I missed one of my colleagues. I think it's actually Tom who's on the line as well, too. Pianki?
Well, you know, the history of that goes way back further than that. It was Ralph Bunch, who was African-American, back in 1948 to help broker that deal with the United, with the League of Nations and those two factions. And you remember Helen Thomas, who was a long-term White House correspondent?
Mm-hmm.
She recently passed away. She told the Jews they need to go back to Europe. Anwar Sadat, when he was living, he told Malcolm Begin, you might have built bagels, but you didn't build a pyramid. And, you know, you can go back further enough in history when that area was controlled by what they call the ancient Egyptians, or Ramesses, and several other pharaohs or Susans that sat on the throne controlled it. But what I was going to ask Claire, you were talking earlier about France and how the West is losing its presidents. And I'm not mistaken, I heard that the French court granted the Nation of Islam here in the United States $1,000 because of a lawsuit where prevented them, the leader Farrakhan, from coming in and speaking because of his anti-Semitic views. What's going on in this case? Is there courts like the U.S. courts where it seems like they got these double and triple standards? Your court,
well,
your answer, please.
I'm not so familiar with the case that you're raising there. I apologize. But I will go back to Israel again, and something folks may not know. Even though the Jewish people were dispersed multiple times, the Babylonian exile, the Romans, and so forth, to the four corners of the earth, Jewish people always remained in Israel, in Jerusalem, throughout the centuries. And they are called Mizrahi Jews. Now, Jews that dispersed around North Africa and especially into the Iberian Peninsula, those are Sephardic Jews. And then those who found their way into Europe and for generations were in Western, then Eastern Europe and Russia and places further east, those are Ashkenazi Jews. Now, interestingly, rather recently, at least within the last, I don't know, about 10 years or so, DNA studies have been done because now we're able to do these kinds of things. We weren't able technologically, medically earlier. And they tested, they sampled, I think it's from the mitochondria, of populations, Mizrahi, Sephardic, and Ashkenazi Jews, and Ethiopian Jews, by the way, as well. And what they found is that in the DNA, the mitochondria of Jewish people all over the world, there are basic similarities. The identity of the Jewish people, when you track it back to say, how could all these dispersed populations share the same DNA characteristics, it has to go back thousands and thousands of years, and it does. And so it shows that Jewish people, from wherever they may be currently in the, you know, the 21st century on Earth, they all share the same origin as the people of their ancestral homeland in Israel, going back at least 3,000 years and more.
Wow. I'm going to pick up on what's going on with the Jews in this country and what they're not doing. I want to bring just Tom in the conversation real quickly. Tom from Missouri, and see the question. I think it's the first time talking to Claire. Tom, you're on. Do you have a question?
Yeah, hi. Just going back a little bit, you were talking about basically Western civilization not wanting to defend itself.
Uh-huh.
The answer, and Ms. Lopez knows Diana West, she uses the term Hitler's revenge. Basically, it's a form of white guilt on steroids, that we have this collective conscience against some of the things we've done wrong, that now basically any kind of Western nationalism, pro-Western collective identity is going to be equated with Nazism. So we try to not look like we're doing that. Every other race can do it, that's fine, but not us.
Yeah, it's like white guys can't get mad at anybody else, but anybody can get mad at white guys. To put it simply. Claire, this is an interesting point. I'm not familiar with this.
Yeah, I think it's a hollowing out of the will to survive in Western civilization writ large, all across the span, the expanse of Western civilization. Maybe it's because life got too easy. Maybe it's because all of these, you know, magnificent accomplishments allowed Westerners to become soft, not facing adversary the way their ancestors did. They just became lazy and soft and self-indulgent and stopped defending what it was that had made them and Western civilization great in the first place.
Fascinating. But we weren't soft in World War II. You know, there were just, you know, regular, you know, car mechanics and, you know, basic people that just got up and volunteered and fought, you know, incredibly bravely. That greatest generation, you know, we're only two generations away from that, or maybe three.
No,
I'm
actually
sure.
One generation. My own father and my uncle both fought in World War II, mostly in the European theaters. It also has to do with the infiltration, we've talked about this before, of the communist Marxist influence.
Right.
Beginning certainly in the last century, after, you know, the 1917 revolution in Russia and carrying all the way through to the current day. But the infiltration of a deliberate effort to destroy Western civilization, destroy America from within by attacking our institutions, academia, faith communities, targeting government, targeting popular culture, obviously, Hollywood, films, movies, and so forth, that has played a role, too, here as well as in Europe.
Well, I think it's been huge. It's like we've almost lost, Americans have forgotten how to be Americans. You know, they sort of lost that spirit. It's been bred out, taught out, indoctrinated out, propagandized out, and we need to rediscover that. And that's what I think Trump was doing, and that's why I think Trump was so dangerous to these people.
You're missing a point on World War II, though.
Okay.
Okay.
I want to get to the current day more, but let's do one more point on World War II.
No, I can do this real fast. Fast. World War II in Europe, we discovered the concentration camps, Holocaust, and that created a certain white guilt. Now, you mentioned the Soviet Union.
Why would that
create
a white guilt?
They tried at Nuremberg. Let me finish, please. Then I'll let you go. They tried at Nuremberg to make the crime being offensive war by a fascist state, but a leftist socialist state, that was fine and dandy. They managed to create this white Western guilt, and that's been blocking us ever since. Now, remember, Trump was called a Nazi. Nazis had their swastikas, we had our MAGA hats. There starts to be, to try to make them look a lot alike, and by nature, they're going to sort of look alike, even if one's horrible and one's not. And that's what's been going on, because that's what the leftists are doing, and that's why she mentioned communist infiltration. It's exactly the same thing. This is just a tool of theirs. And like I said, Diana West does it right with Hitler's revenge.
I don't think that Western guilt thing extended to the United States. I mean, certainly not, you know, the GIs and their families who fought in theaters all over the globe. In Germany, perhaps.
Well, since then.
But not in the United States.
But
the United States fought against Nazi Germany, defeated Nazi Germany. Fascism is dead and buried. Along with the Third Reich 75 years ago. It's got nothing to do with modern-day anything at all anymore. So it's not that kind of guilt. The guilt in America, I think, is of a different sort, and it is the guilt of the legacy of slavery here. It's not about the Second World War. That's Germany, perhaps part of Europe, Western Europe. But
yeah,
not
I've helped... I've muted Tom for a bit just because
is over our history, also long gone and done with, of slavery. But that's being resurrected to drive, by the Marxists, to drive a wedge into our society.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I agree with you absolutely there. Jonathan, did you want to say something?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that. I mean, it's a huge, gigantic, you know, not worldwide, but most of the world, you know, social experiment. It's difficult to just to say down to one thing. But it reminds me that I took a course, and I don't really know why, but it was in graduate school. They talk a lot about U.S. attempts to, say, develop South America and everything like that, in an administration by JFK that no longer believed in what made America great. So they thought, they just thought throwing money at the problem, because we trusted in money, we no longer believed in our own principles. And I can see the, when, just hearing you talk, I'm thinking that we're looking at the tremendous development of the West and the United States and the relative poverty of other people. And since we no longer believe in the values that, that accomplish that, we just feel guilty about it. We don't see that our I don't want to use the word culture because it's misunderstood, that the ways that we went about building that society, we no longer believe in it ourselves, so we can't explain why we have all these accomplishments and other countries don't. So it turns into guilt, I think. And again, I'm not saying this is the answer, but it's just something that occurs to me hearing you talk about it.
I think that's a good point. Instead of taking pride in what led to our excellence, so for some reason, and again, I go back to the Marxist communist information operations that got us there. Instead of taking pride in those accomplishments, it was turned into guilt. Upside down, just completely upside down.
I believe that. Pianki, and then I got one question for Claire before she goes.
France and Britain and Germany will be fighting today if it hadn't been for the United States to enter and provide its industrial might to that war. And
war, what are you talking about?
World War II.
World War II, okay.
Where the hell come in? I mean, we can go back to World War I. United States have been unique in those eras with its ability to rise up against all the odds and change the tide of battles. And that's what the hate is about today. It has been festering in the United States, in the schools in particular, where the children who are adults today just don't know what they're talking about.
Claire? I think we forgot about the Americans. That's my point. Yeah. Claire, go ahead.
I will point people in the direction of the very excellent Front Page magazine from the David Horowitz Freedom Center, where last year I wrote a series of four articles about critical race theory and ethnic studies in our schools. And now, in the last several weeks, I have written another three. Two are published. One is about to be. And I'll do a fourth, again, on critical race theory infiltration into our school curricula across the country. And that is what is, it's Marxist. It's absolutely Marxist in origin. It was dreamed up in the faculty lounges of the leftist, you know, academia in this country after the Frankfurt School came over here back in the 1920s and 30s. And it is designed explicitly to tear us apart according to race and other inherent characteristics like skin color.
Another reason they had to get rid of Trump, who was uniting people. Can you post those articles on the Action Radio group so we can read them? Because I'm not aware of all the stuff you're doing. You know, I want to be able to read this stuff easily. You keep hiding all the good things that you're doing. My question
I can't keep up. That's the problem.
What's that?
I can't keep up.
Oh, I know. I understand. All right. So let's project a little bit ahead here. What is this all about with the left in this country? What ultimately, where are they going with this? Why are they doing what they're doing to support the terrorists, support the alleged Palestinians? I don't, for lack of a better word, why? Why are they totally averse to everything? What are they trying to accomplish?
Well, again, it is a repudiation of Western civilization and Judeo-Christian principles enshrined in our foundational documents, Declaration of Independence, Bill of Rights, Constitution, etc., and a perverse willingness to align with America's enemies. That's all it is in a nutshell. Anybody who's opposed to American foundational principles, Judeo-Christian principles of our Constitution and foundational documents, anybody who's opposed to that, they're with, they're for. Now, obviously, you know, the members of Congress who are Muslim are aligning with the Islamic terrorists because that's
yeah.
natural, expected. But the leftists, like a Bernie Sanders or an AOC, for example, they hate America. They hate everything that America is founded on, all of our principles. You know, principles of individual liberty and government by consent of the governed, equality of all, not equity, equality of all and human dignity before rule of law. They hate all of that and want to see it destroyed.
Yeah. Do they think that by snuggling up to Palestinians and the Iranian government that they're all going to be friends and buds and that they'll I don't know. I think they're totally the delusional.
No degree in psychology. My degrees are international relations and other things.
Oh, come on, stretch.
More recent history, you know, the Castro Revolution, Communist Revolution in Cuba, which is in many of our lifetimes, they don't understand that even the fellow travelers like themselves, the useful idiots, as Lenin might have said, useful fools, going to be the first ones lined up against the wall and shot by the likes of a Che Guevara or a Castro's. They don't know their history, or they think somehow that they're immune from it. They're going to be the exception from that. They don't understand how communist revolutions work.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if you're going to betray your own country, the communists will think you'll certainly betray them eventually too, so better take you out early.
Runs out, you're done.
Yeah.
So the
they don't get that either. Bianchi,
and
then when I get to Jonathan, we're going to switch to the legal report here in a minute. Yeah.
You can see this in the military, in government, in academia, in university, and now in your public schools at the elementary level with this critical race theory. We're beyond the 2-minute warning.
No, I agree. I agree completely.
Yeah.
This is just Claudia, do you have a final comment, and then I want to get to Jonathan. We're gonna
No, just agreed 100%. We're in deep trouble.
This first of all, I want to thank you, Claire, for a great history that puts it in perspective, and it really, I think the people that are you know, that have usurped the White House have no clue about anything that you just said. They don't understand history. They don't understand the personalities. They don't understand, you know, where the Muslims want to go with this, that they're not going to snuggle up to them to make friends. They don't understand that betraying their own country is not a good thing to do, that Americans still want to be Americans, even though most have forgotten how, that we're going to reteach them. That's what conservatives are working on right now. It's a mess, and this is what happens when you let, like I say, thieves steal your country. Okay. Total switch of gears. Jonathan, we don't have even time for your theme today, but let's get on to what's happening in the legal world. We've got about 26 minutes, unfortunately. I'll give you more time any other day if you want to elaborate on anything. What's going on?
Well, of course, it's always a difficult choice to know where to focus. There's a lot going on. Your gun advocate should focus on the Supreme Court case that just came out on the search and seizure of a gun, which very favorable, but
I think Jim will do that Friday. We have a gun report for this.
I think
don't
so.
We have the Second Amendment report. Yeah, I'm sorry, Jonathan. Go ahead.
Right. No, that'd be good. So I'm just going to, you know, spin the wheel of outrages and crazy things going on this week, and focus on the discussions about arresting Donald Trump. And I think that this might be useful for people to be aware of and to think about it. I think that the leaks are intended to have a, you know, a political propaganda shock value, and therefore that's one reason why I think it would be good for people to be cognizant of what's really going on, because the effect on Trump supporters and everybody else is, I think, and the Republican Party, is the point of this discussion. So I think even though otherwise it might seem to be wildly premature, I wanted to write an article with Norm Bradford, who is a criminal defense genius. He's a consultant. He thought it was premature. Let's wait and see. But I think I think we need to understand the political side of this. So there's a lot of discussion going on about how the investigation in New York State under New York law has transitioned into a criminal probe. And there's been a lot of discussion in Florida about whether Palm Beach County officials preparing to handle the arrest of Donald Trump, all of which, you know, immediately should make us think, whoa, these are not official proceedings. This is nonsense. This is not, these kinds of discussions are not proper. They're just, they have the appearance of having something to do with the law, but really they're just a bunch of speculation and how can I say this politely? They're just, they're sort of, what's a polite word I can use for this?
I call it making political prisoners out of Trump people. You know, the George Papadopoulos, Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, they were all political prisoners. I think they're trying to make Trump a political prisoner too, based on nothing but their political ideology. How's that?
Even in a fantasy way, because nothing has actually happened, mm-hmm. and it's just a bunch of talk of leftists trying to make themselves feel good. Shall we say, I could say it more graphically off the air. But
I know what you mean.
So the thing, I mean, it's like, you know, and some people have criticized the right about that, like with John Durham, like any day now, you know, the investigations into Russia and the cynics among us said, you know, they're never going to do anything. Not that they shouldn't. They're just never going to do what they should do. So we have to understand, but it is having its effect. The establishment, right and left, has all Republican and Democrat. They're not right. Has always tried to separate. I mean, the establishment and inside the Beltway swamp creatures have always been, in my vivid way of putting it, been trying to convince the girlfriend who left that her new boyfriend is really not as good as she thinks he is. And that is never, ever going to win her back.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that somehow if I convince my ex-girlfriend that she's dating a dud, you know, even if you win that argument, she's not coming back to you. And yet this is the way the establishment has tried to go after Trump supporters. It's like, See, he's really a bad guy. You shouldn't, you know, you should come back to us. You know, if you ever convince Trump supporters that Trump is bad, they are never going back to the establishment. Never. And yet that is a lot of what's going on. So the idea that Trump, you know, the hope, the fantasy of seeing Trump hauled away in handcuffs is I think part of that whole emphasis. Now let's see what's really going on, because these are leaks. The leaks are illegal. They shouldn't be happening, and they're not authoritative, but everything that we have is indications. And remember, I would tend to say, well, let's wait until we actually see the real reality, except that it is intended to affect our public view of things. Mm-hmm. Ahead of actual legal action. So the thing is that apparently Cyrus Vance, the prosecutor in New York, and the New York Attorney General, the prosecutors, and our U.S. attorney on the federal level have been apparently looking after, well, the rumors, the leak is, which, of course, is, you know, we know it's like from the highest level off the record, but not very much, is that
they leak all the time.
The investigation. Right. Exactly. I mean, it's a leak, but come on, you know, it's like
they leaked Trump's private phone calls when he was in office. They had he had a bunch of hacks from Obama that were taking his personal phone calls to leaders, and they'd appear in the New York Times the next day. Leaks are all over Trump. I mean, they'll go after anything that he does. There's no secrecy.
The leak is that they've turned an investigation of the Trump Organization into a criminal probe, which actually doesn't, you know. For the real world people, that really doesn't mean very much. It does involve a different legal category and probably different personnel, and there is some difference. But really, it's just saying that we're probing in a criminal capacity really doesn't mean that much.
Do they have a charge? Have they come up with a charge yet, or what are they going for? What's their goal here?
We think from all the leaks we've had, we think that they're trying to say we should start with Michael Cohen doing a plea deal. Former lawyer that the Trump organization inflated the assets of the value of real estate assets for the purpose of getting loans, and deflated them for the purpose of paying taxes.
Wait a minute. This is earth-shattering news. Now, wait a minute. So Biden can steal an election. The Democrats can totally ruin our country. They can cut off our energy supply. They can start a war in the Middle East. And yet Trump was trying to get better loans and cut his taxes? I'm shocked. Jonathan, I am sorry. I am shocked. They should go after Trump.
Everybody does that.
Here's the reason why that's a threat is because it's New York. It would be like being charged in the District of Columbia. You know, if you're guilty of being in the District of Columbia while Republican, you're cooked. So it's like driving while black. Down the middle
state.
Same
thing, yeah. Yeah.
It is. It's become, and that's why I said it that way. It's become the flip side of of driving while black.
You can say
nobody should be treated that way. Nobody should be treated that way. But the thing is that the problem is that unless there is some objective bright line wall against it, you could find New York voters who are where grand juries come from, and who would vote to indict. You know, remember that in an indictment, the standard is ridiculously low. It's probable cause that a crime might have been committed. It doesn't mean somebody's guilty. It doesn't mean there's even evidence. And then on the other hand, only the prosecutor participates. So if you have, if you were in a meeting with the Pope while something happened and you have the perfect alibi, you don't get to tell the grand jury that you were on the other side of the planet in the Vatican that day. They never hear that. They only hear one side of the story, and then they indict. So he could easily be indicted, and whether it's warranted or not. And the New York courts, I've heard disturbing things about their allegiance to any sort of logic.
I got a question. Who controls
so
these people?
Getting it
stopped. This is the Southeast District Justice Department. Who's in charge of them?
Yeah, who's in charge of them is the New York Times. I mean, they're human beings, and the idea of brave judges that blaze their own trail is like either never existed or certainly doesn't exist now. None of the judges are going to want to go against what's being written in the editorial pages of the Washington Post or the New York Times. Nobody technically controls them. Because
they're in the Justice Department, right? Or they're part of the Justice Department. It's a district.
Well, the
of
thing
the
is,
Justice
is what
Department.
They're trying to do is it,
yeah.
What they're trying to do is go after him under state law.
Oh.
Not under the federal, so that he can't be pardoned.
But they can't do that with. How can federal judiciary or federal justice, personnel go after Trump on state law? Wouldn't the state have to do that?
Well, they're cooperating, but it is the state prosecutors doing this,
and
the state attorney general. But of course, they're getting support from the Department of Justice. Who's looking at it simultaneously. So the thing is that if they want to indict him and arrest him, there's almost now technically many of these things you don't actually get arrested, but it's like I said with George Floyd, I think for a $20 counterfeit bill, they should have done an investigation, turned it over to the Treasury Department and let them investigate and go and see if he had hundreds more in his apartment. An arrest, being charged and indicted, does not necessarily require an actual physical arrest. But that's what the fear porn of the left is focused on. So here's the thing, though. So first of all, is there a line at which some adult in the room could step in and say, no, you can't do this, and talking this over with Norm Bradford. I almost want to get him on here, but I think he wants to wait till more develops. Yes, I think there are. Remember that around 2015, Trump turned the running of his businesses over to his children, right?
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
The statute of
blind trust or something. Yeah.
Well, he didn't do it. He should have done a blind trust. It's not required for the president, vice president, but instead of a blind trust, he did his own sort of do-it-yourself version and just handed it over things. So for the past 5 to 6 years, or 4 to 5 years, Trump has not been involved in any of this. And so, and the statute of limitations for these things is, depending on exactly what it is, five or six years. And they're talking about events back in the 1990s. So if they indict him, and unless Trump's lawyers are stupid, which they pretty much are, not just Trump's lawyers, but basically Republican lawyers, they would, you know, like competent lawyers, and I've done this. I worked for a group where we stayed up all night with our lawyers to go into court that morning. They should already have the papers in their briefcase to walk over and say, sorry, statute of limitations, quash. You know, they should not start writing. They should have finished writing before it even happens. And so the other thing is that they're saying that he overstated the value of assets to get loans. And this happened with, what's his name, with the campaign manager with Turkey. They didn't lose a penny.
Or who?
No.
Or Scaramucci or Scaramucci?
No, the guy who was convicted. Who was
Roger Stone or Paul Manafort or one of those two?
Manafort. So Manafort allegedly lied on loan applications for which not a penny was lost. So if you lie on it, but the thing is, if you lie on a loan application, if you look carefully at the law, and there was no money lost, there is no crime. Now the Department of Justice didn't follow that rule, but it does talk about the victim, and how much they lost.
It's nonsense.
So if he overstated the value of his real estate to get loans, and he paid the loans back,
right?
There's no crime. And but the other thing too is that I started out this conversation by saying they're talking about a criminal probe, and most people will miss this, of the Trump Organization, not him. And the reason being that Trump does not personally do any of this. He has accountants, he has real estate experts, he has attorneys, whoever assess the value of, and you know, the way you assess the value on a real estate is you look at comparables. And how you look at the comparable sales in the neighborhood or in the vicinity is fuzzy. You know, it's a matter of opinion. It's not an exact science. And, with the most honest, if the Pope decided to go into real estate and had the most honest person you could possibly imagine, it's subjective as to what value you come up with for a comparable sale. And everybody knows it. The mortgage underwriter is going to do their own comparable analysis because they know it's subjective. I mean, I have I'm not active, but I have a real estate license, and as well as legal license. So the thing is, and there's something in the law called reasonable reliance. You know, if I tell you that Elvis once owned this car and you should buy it, and any reasonable person would say, well, wait a minute, this car didn't exist when Elvis died. Then it would be unreasonable to believe that.
Yeah.
There cannot be fraud if there is not reasonable reliance. And so, for example, they say, well, he undervalued the same real estate for the purpose of taxes. And again, he didn't personally do anything. He's this big business with all these experts working on it. But the government of the city of New York has a tax assessor. So if I go into the tax assessor here in Prince William County, Virginia, and I say, I think my house is worth, you know, $1,000. And he says, well, hang on a minute. Let me check for myself. And no, I think it's worth $300,000.
Yeah.
The tax assessor does not listen to your opinion. So Michael Cohen's complaint that he undervalued real estate for the purpose of taxes flies in the face that the tax authorities don't listen to your opinion.
Yeah.
They do their own analysis.
Yeah, we only have about 10 minutes left. I want to sort of cut to the chase here. Pianki, you've been waiting patiently. Do you want to get in on this? I have a feeling you want to say something.
Well, I was going to talk about one other different thing to show you how the hypocritical and the double, triple standards exist, but let him continue.
Okay. Well, I just want to cut to the chase here. To me, this is made up. They want to make Trump a political prisoner. They want to do anything they can to discredit him. There's a move by the left to not only destroy Trump, but to destroy the memory of Trump, to destroy anything that he accomplished. You know, we talked about
right.
the Abraham Accords, you know, over in the Middle East. Those have been totally subverted. You know, we're back to the Iran deal. We're funding the Palestinians. We're back in the climate change, you know, money transfer accords. They're sucking up to China. They're denying that Dr. Fascist and the Chinese Communist Party conspired in the Wuhan lab to create a marketing vehicle for Dr. Fascist and a biological weapon for the Chinese Army. You know, they've denied everything. They've reversed everything that was good, that was working well, and just out of their own arrogance, and they had to steal an election to do it. So part of this is they are so afraid of not only Trump, but the memory of Trump. And, so bottom line, where is this going? Are they trying to stop the 2022, backlash that's coming? do they think that this is popular? Do they think that Americans actually support them, you know, stealing the White House and destroying everything that was going well? What are they thinking?
Well, that's it. I think they are trying to throw the 2022 and 2024 elections. By making you believe that Trump is guilty and he's a bad guy and you should go back to your ex boyfriend.
But Trump supporters don't believe that. Claire said that too. We don't believe that stuff.
What?
No. The Trump supporters don't buy this for a second. They know this is a fraud.
No,
go ahead.
But the establishment cannot accept that we don't buy it. That's why they call us a cult. They just cannot penetrate their brain that if they stalk us outside, they're not going to win us back. And they just cannot penetrate, because who could not love them? You know, who could not love John McCain and Cindy McCain and Liz Cheney? I mean, they're the establishment. They're beloved. They've been told by all their sycophants that everybody
Mike
loves
Pence.
Them. And, yeah, how could you not adore us? And so there must be some, it must be some witchcraft involved in getting people to love Trump. So they honestly believe that if they come up with the killer story that Trump supporters are going to wake up and go, oh, you know what? They were right. We shouldn't have supported Trump. and of course, we really didn't. We chose Trump because we wanted to kick the Liz Cheney's out of the party for decades.
Yeah.
We didn't follow Trump. Trump finally came along and gave us an answer. So the thing is, everybody needs to understand that all this talk about Trump is going to be arrested is mental fill in the blank. It's fantasies by the left. If they try it, competent attorneys will go in there, slap down the statute of limitations, motion to quash, and it will go away. This is the latest attempt to convince us that we all made a big mistake and we should have voted for Bob Dole and John McCain and Mitt Romney. They're the real Republican Party, and we strayed, and we should repent and come back to them.
Yeah, Pianki?
Greg, I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. I think they want Trump out of the way so they can proceed on with destroying the United States.
Well, that could be. But I think they're also
so
wrapped up in their own self-righteousness that they think that stealing the election was a good thing and that would be popular and they could cover it up and it wouldn't matter. We just go, oh, thank goodness that the real people are back in charge, when in reality, they're the thieves and it's not working out as they had planned. You know, we are standing up.
That's an interesting Jonathan? Twist, because if Trump gets arrested while we find out that the election was stolen, mm-hmm. they think the average person, oh, phew, we dodged that bullet. Thank God they stole the
Ain't going to happen that way. Jonathan, where'd you go?
You still there?
Yeah, no, you disappeared for a second. Yeah, that's the they actually believe their own propaganda, right? That they think that the American people support them stealing the election? Is that how far this goes? Because they're delusional.
They stole the election so that they could proceed on with what they would have proceeded on if Hillary had won.
Yeah. Well, they knew they couldn't win. Obviously, they wouldn't have stolen it. And as we said for 2 years, you know, when I first started the show, I said when the 2020 election comes up, we have to outvote the vote fraud. And apparently we did. So they had to increase the vote fraud to such an extent, to such an extreme, that it became painfully obvious what's going on. Jonathan, I don't know if you're still there or not, but you were a second ago. But
you
something that I started – go ahead, Bianca, and then I got another point.
You can hear me now, right?
All right, Jonathan, yeah, you're back. Hold on, Bianca. Let's get Jonathan, and then we'll go back to you. Jonathan?
Well, no, I think I don't know what you heard. I was saying it, but you had the interesting angle that, you know, as Arizona comes out and the evidence comes out that they stole the election, maybe you heard this already, that mm-hmm. That they're hoping that the people will go, well, phew, Trump's been arrested, so, you know, I'm sure glad they stole the election.
Interesting. Yeah, that's warped psychology. Bianchi, we have about 3 minutes left.
You have things going on to remove Trump so they can get back to their business. Look at the most recent thing with the warrantless seizure of guns that came out of the administration. Supreme Court
yeah,
turned
that
down unanimously.
Yeah,
I mean,
unanimously is the interesting part. Yeah. We're going to talk about that, I'm sure, Friday with Jim Dykes, our gun reporter. What's happening, Kelly Ward actually says something fascinating. I couldn't find a quote in an article, but she said it on One American News, everything that we've been saying, that when this audit shows, wait, I don't know if she said that, but you know, when this audit shows that the election was stolen, that there is so much fraud that in Maricopa County alone that has to be disqualified, and Vernon Jones wants to have a full audit in Georgia, that the dominoes are going to start falling. And she said that Arizona may have to reverse their electors for Trump. And if Arizona does it and two other states do that and Trump gets over 270, then Kelly Ward says, well, you've got a fraudulent president. You can't have that. You can't have somebody there that didn't win. You know, and so this is what's going to get interesting. So she basically, you know, confirmed everything I've been saying, that this is how this is going to go. You know, Trump is going to get over 270 electors when three states overturn their incorrect finding for Biden, and they correct it. That's why I call it the election correction. They're going to correct for Trump. They're going to send, you know, Trump delegates to Congress, and that's when it gets interesting too. But Trump's going to get over 270 before the end of the year, I have a feeling, depending on how the audits go. And then what are they going to do?
The auditors.
Everybody's going to know he's a thief in chief. Jonathan?
Right. The auditors are claiming that that's not what they're doing because they're – but you're absolutely right. They're using their power. Remember, Roger Stone and others were convicted of lying to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
This is the exact same thing at the state level. The Arizona State Senate has the exact same power of oversight.
Oh.
And the exact same legal status. So what the Arizona State Senate is doing is using its power as the legislature in the exact same way the Congress did in asking these questions that they say they lied to Congress about. And the rhinos running thing are doing the exact same crimes to the Arizona State Senate. So they're using that power, but ultimately the effect, I think, will be exactly as you described.
Well, I think for political, for public relations reasons, they're saying, well, the audit's just to find the truth. We're just looking for anomalies. They wouldn't have done this audit unless they were pretty convinced, 99.99%, that they knew this was going to show a fraudulent election. You know, and the same thing when the Arizona Senate says, thank you. I think the Arizona Senate is saying exactly the same thing. PR. Well, we're just looking for the truth here. No, they're not. They know what the truth is. You know, and Jonathan, you know, we got 50 seconds. I'm going to give it to you. But isn't this how it works in law and in politics, that you don't do anything unless you already know the answer? You don't ask a question you don't know the answer
to? Preferably, yes. That's what you should – what should be, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And let me say that what they're saying is that they want to write laws so that next – because this is the big thing. It's like, yes, the election was stolen, but our fear is what election – from now on, every election is going to be stolen. So they're using their power to write laws to make sure that the next election is honest.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they can't be stopped.
Yeah, but that's not good enough. They have to fix the last one. And I've been saying that ever since. And I think Kelly Ward just confirmed that. We need to fix 2020. She said that. Look at the One American News report if you get a chance. I'm sure they're going to repeat it a few times. Hopefully I'll find it, you know, in print so I can post it for everybody. We got 5 seconds left. Jonathan, thank you so much. You're the only one left. Everybody else is gone.
Thank you.
But let's do it again tomorrow.
Enjoyed it.
This is Greg. Yeah, thank you. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Podcast should be available in about 5 minutes or so. And we'll see you tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock in the morning Central Time.